From high atop the last word on sports.com, CFL headquarters, this is Chunky and the Man. And now the man who knows everything about the Canadian Football League, just ask him, your host, Brendan McGuire.
Okay, the mic's on. You breathing? You okay? You're good? Good to go. Just give me hand signals. You can get that mic up in your face. There we go.
Okay.
Underway. Easy as that. Episode number 27. We are in studio with the great Marshall Lerner. He's kind of what do we call you? The backup.
I'm the 12th man.
You're the backup quarterback. Yes. I'm the head coach. Marcus is a quarterback, and you're the backup.
I'm the 13th and 14th and 15th man.
Or do we make you equal to Marcus?
No, no. Goodness, no.
You guys can like share the reps.
No. I'm the backup.
First episode after the preseason, a whole lot of things that we're going to talk about here. Manziel Mania, we've got to do our weekly check-in on that. I get kind of sick of everybody just wanting to talk about that all the time. But
it's hard not to talk about it, though.
It's interesting. Winnipeg's quarterback situation. Oh, Marshall has some interesting ideas there. Can Rich Stubler and Mike Sherman pull a rabbit out of the hat in Montreal? Can anyone put a lipstick on this pig? We need to discuss that. And we're going to have some division rankings and Grey Cup combatants. This is episode number 27 of Chunky and the Man CFL podcast. Chunky's on the road. That guy spends half his time at home in Indianapolis.
Good for him. It's probably a nice drive.
And he drives it too.
The Colts, you know. And I've never been to Indiana. Been near it, but not.
You think if you're going to put on all those miles driving back and forth to the States, of all the places you would go, Indianapolis would not be high on my list.
Fair enough, but it's his home, though.
Yeah, fair enough. And people down there say the same thing about us.
Saskatchewan, of course.
Yeah. We'll begin on episode number 27. By the way, find us at lastwordonsports.com, of course, and wherever you find your favorite podcasts, on iTunes or any of the other apps, just Google us, you'll find us. My mom said, "Where do I find you guys?" And I told her, and it was too confusing for her. She Googled us, she found us. So there you go, on the World Wide Web. Google. The Ryder cuts caught a lot of attention. And, you know, we hate to make this show too Ryder-centric because a lot of our listeners are outside of the country in Southern Ontario. But the Riders are a big part of our listening audience and by far and away the most popular franchise in the league. So I do think that we need to address it. A lot of people made a lot of commotion about Bakari Grant getting cut, a lot of commotion about, I was going to say Rob Begg last, but he's the big one.
Chad Owens.
And Chad Owens, he's the other one. Thank you.
Yes.
So that grabbed a lot of attention when the Riders made those three cuts. When I look at it, I didn't expect any one of those three, but yet I'm not surprised that it was all of those three.
No, if you look at them, they're all north of 30. Chad Owens, I marvel at the man. He's 36. I thought he could still play. I thought he was a wonderful injection last year at the end of the season. Remember, he sat for weeks with a foot injury. People thought that he was never going to get in. Once he got in, I thought he added a nice dimension to the offense. I was really disappointed. I thought he would have been, a really fun thing. And he brings that fun and excitement for the fans as well. Bakari Grant, I thought he was excellent last year. I mean, he made a couple of silly mistakes. I noticed he dropped one on Friday night, one that he should have caught. But pretty reliable, experienced receiver. Worked very well with Brandon Bridge, I thought. And brought back. That hurts the heart. I think the Ryder Nation heart, because we all love Rob Bagg. Rob Bagg, I believe, Brendan, if you could correct me, but was he the only guy left from the 2013 Grey Cup team?
Or Jesus, I was thinking, I thought you were going to say 2009, but yeah, maybe.
He's,
yeah.
Maybe Dan Clark, maybe Brendan Labatt, maybe?
Labatt.
Labatt was there, maybe?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But really, very few other, maybe Sam Hurl is back now.
Because he's returned, he's come full circle.
But I mean, he's and certainly Rob Bagg's most well-known popular rider of the last, since Darian left, for sure.
The thing that I'll always remember about Rob Bagg was Grey Cup 2009. I remember I was listening to the broadcast. I was stuck at the border trying to get home from Buffalo Bills-Miami Dolphins game that day in Orchard Park, New York.
You went to a Buffalo Bills game and you missed a great
cup? I did, 2009. And I was supposed to get to my buddy, his name's Andre Prue, not the ref, but different Andre Prue. Yeah. I was supposed to get to his place in Toronto. We were going to watch the game.
Right.
And they've got this major problem. This has been going on for years. I hope it's better now. But getting back into Canada across the border after a Buffalo Bills game is a gong show. And I'd heard stories that because it was so backed up, sometimes the border guards would call in sick.
Oh, great.
So that would make it even worse. Yeah. So basically, long story short, I was I left after the Bills game at about – I left before the game was over, and it was like almost 4 Eastern – and I got back into Toronto at about 11 p.m. that night. So it was about 7 hours to get from. Yeah, so I listened to it all on the radio.
Yeah.
They had the national broadcast. And they had Rod and Carm doing the first half and the Alouette broadcasters doing the second half.
Nice.
It was Rick Moffitt and Ed Filion.
Okay.
Yeah, Tony Proudfoot was no longer with us by that point. Or no, he might have. I think he was gone by that point. But he wasn't broadcasting if he was still around. So anyways, I listened to it. I made a short story long. So, happens all the time. So, I'm fighting my way back across the border,
right.
And I'm listening to it on this crappy AM signal. And Willie Cole is doing some of the sideline reporting.
Mm-hmm.
And he's talking about how Rob Begg is, like, finished. Like, you know, he won't be able to finish the game. He's hurt again. And I thought that was the last we had seen of Rob Begg, the way he just kept having injury after injury pile up after that. And the fact that he's still playing is just shocking to me and should be applauded. The concern – carry on.
Oh, sorry. I thought he missed – didn't he miss the full 2010 season?
Yes. I don't think he played again until 2012.
Yeah.
Maybe it was 2013 when he was playing fully again.
Well, I think 2012 he came back, or 2011.
But I think he tried to, but if he did come back in 2011, he didn't play much, you know. And so – you know, the fact that he fought through all those injuries, like that's a guy who wants it more than anybody.
Yeah.
And people say when you're drafting, because a draft is such an inexact science in any sport.
Of course.
And what is the one thing that you need to measure before you decide that you're going to take somebody? Or if you're going to go off the board and you're going to take somebody, and it's who wants it more?
Yeah.
Who really loves the game, right? And there are so many, I'll give you a perfect example, and I brought this story up. Hundreds of times, and some of you listeners are probably sick of me saying it. I remember as a reporter, 2007, the CFL draft. CFL draft's very much a non-event, but sometimes it's still a draft.
Yeah.
So it's still a bit of an event for some of the diehards. And number one overall in that draft was Chris Bowman.
Yes.
We found out the night before that Chris Bowman was going to be taken first overall.
Yes.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I had covered the U of R Rams the year before. And so I was very familiar with Chris Bowman. And I remember being shocked, thinking, what do they know that we don't know? And I talked to a lot of people around the University of Regina Rams, and they couldn't figure it out either, right? And I think in the long haul, I figured it out. Bowman was tall. He ran a good 40. So he was tall. He was fast. His measurables were good. So they took him, number one. Chris Getzlaff.
Yes.
Probably didn't measure out so well in the combine, but Chris Getzlaff was tough as nails, and he wanted it more than anybody.
True. Seventh rounder, right? I
think it was fifth rounder.
It was a fifth rounder.
Hamilton took him in the fifth round.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and then we got him for Corey.
He was just a throw-in. It was he and Corey Holmes.
Corey Holmes, yes.
For Jason Armstead.
Right.
So nobody, you know, and don't say, well, brilliant move by the Riders. The Riders didn't know that Chris Getzlaff would have the career that he had. And to be fair, Chris was in the perfect situation in Saskatchewan,
yes.
Right? He could have easily just fallen right off the map. He's a perfect example. He and Dave Sponges, I think about both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Sponge was a little better than Getz. But those are two guys who, if you didn't have a ratio, never would have played in this league.
True.
There's no question.
But
yet, once they got a chance, an opportunity, proper role, boom.
But really what I want to say about Rob Begg is he's the end of the year, right? For as a Rider fan, as a CFL fan, that era of Rider football in the late 2000s and...
the decade of decadence.
Right, and in early teens, him, Darian, Chris Getzlaff...
they're all gone.
Eddie Fantuz, all gone.
All gone.
Yeah, all gone. That's sad for a Rider fan. But in the same vein, we understand Rob was, 33 years old?
I think he's born in, I think he's going to be 34 this year.
33, 34.
Yeah.
So, same as Messam.
Yeah.
Same age.
Well,
the same age.
My concern for Rob, and I don't know him at all,
yeah,
is sometimes those guys love the game so much,
mm-hmm,
and they get so into it, and that's their life, and that's the reason he's been able to have a career like this. Yeah. I just hope that he's able to transition smoothly to another career. It doesn't shock me that they would let him go, only because he's probably making six figures, and we don't know how much Messam's going to start this year. He's collecting six figures. Yes. Do you want to have the possibility of two Canadians backing up, collecting six figures? True. So from that standpoint, it makes sense. Bakari makes sense just because, I mean, they're stacked at receiver. Somebody was going to have to go.
They really are stacked, because remember, Caleb Holly sat a lot last year.
Yeah.
Along with Chad Owens. And
probably just an age thing. They probably looked at Holly and said he's younger than Bakari. And
Holly's very dynamic.
Yeah. Well, we'll move on from that. But anyways, I just felt like we needed to touch on that. There are always a lot of surprises. And sometimes if you're going to dump a veteran, you need to do it in training camp because once the season starts, you got to pay him for the year.
Yeah.
Or if it gets far enough in.
I understand as a business move, but it sucks.
Great game, but a really crappy business.
Yes.
Should Ryder fans feel nervous about Zach being their starter after what we've seen so far?
I was. I remember when I was watching him on Friday night, I was thinking, boy, his timing's off. His arm doesn't look that strong. He's under a lot of heat. He's not making his reads quick enough.
You didn't think he had the live arm?
No. He underthrew a couple guys. And it was pretty apparent. He had a couple guys open for a brief moment. And when I compared him to Bo Levi Mitchell, fair or not fair, I noticed a difference in arm strength and in timing. Now, Zach hasn't played since, last August?
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's
almost... Once June Jones took over,
right.
August.
So it's almost a year, and plus he didn't have any success. So his first, because that was his first possessions as a Rider... I'm a bit nervous, to be fair. I'm a little bit nervous. At the same time, in time, I think he'll be fine.
And they went all in on this guy.
Well, all in, except remember, Chris Jones has said many times when he's asked, which he's been asked many, many times, open competition for quarterbacks. If Zach isn't moving the ball, Brandon Bridge is the guy. And I know he'll put him in if Zach is not moving the ball. And it could be as early as this Friday night against the Argos. So I don't know. Who knows? In the CFL, who knows? I mean, our best player on Friday was our third-string quarterback,
David Watford.
Yeah. He looked really good, actually. Now, mind you, it wasn't Calgary's best defense. But I was very impressed with the way he moved the ball and the way he hit his receivers in stride. So, well done. And they did put out the better receivers, I noticed, for him. To help him a little bit. But
I see a lot of, speaking of backup or third string quarterbacks, I saw a lot of people on the Last Word on Sports Twitter account salivating over how great Johnny Manziel looked in that victory in Montreal. Yeah. Did okay.
He did good.
Bunch of short passes, didn't make an interception, got the touchdown pass. I'm not really ready to say, wow, he looked great. No. I would say he did okay.
Right. I agree with Davis Sanchez. When he was asked for his analysis on Manziel, and he said, "Look, you know, he's looking, he's doing well, he's doing what they're asking of him, he's making the simple reads, but he did mention the word vanilla a lot, vanilla offense, vanilla defense. It's not the real challenge yet. He's not learning
the full playbook yet.
Not yet. But at the same vein, he's been in Canada 3 weeks.
Right."
He's progressing nicely, hasn't thrown a ball since December 2015. So, to be fair, he's doing okay. At this stage, he's progressing. I think June Jones is very happy with him. And will he get in soon? Who knows? He could be in.
It's all on Jeremiah.
It's all on Jeremiah. Now, the only thing I don't like about the CFL preseason, it's not long enough. I know some people think it's too long.
Because people hate watching it, but the players need it.
They need it. The coaches need it. I don't know how you could, you know, set these guys up for success in such a short time. 3 weeks ago, now they're setting their final 46-man rosters today. It could be that Mazzoli may have struggled. They have to go into Calgary this weekend, which is never an easy test. Remember the score last year?
60-1.
Was it 60-1?
George Cortez told somebody... Can't remember who it was. He was there because they were honoring the 92 Grey Cup team, and he'd been their offensive coordinator. Yeah. And he said that was the worst game he had ever seen in his life.
That was unbelievable. Unbelievable. I mean, it was men against boys.
Even if you hated Ken Austin, and there are a lot of people who hate Ken Austin, you felt sorry for him.
Well, just, Jack Harris, that was the last time he was on the field, was it not?
No, they had one more game in Edmonton a few days later, and they played much better.
Right, they won, didn't they?
No, they didn't. Oh, they lost. Okay. But then that was his last game. That was when they went in Edmonton and put up a great fight because that week things had been so bad. There was all this heat on like Scott Mitchell, Bob Young, everybody in Hamilton. Yes. And so then they announced, oh, we're bringing in a new assistant head coach, June Jones. Yeah. And you knew that something was going to change right away. Yeah. So they got through the game in Edmonton. Kent probably looked over at him and said, do you feel ready? You ready to do this?
Yeah.
June said, yep, I can do it. All right, here you go. Because Kent knew that he was being treated very, very well by ownership, but no longer welcome to be the head coach.
Right.
I think that's fair to say. This is Chunky and the Man, CFL podcast, episode number 27. Find us on lastwordonsports.com, of course, and you can check out everybody's writing there. We've vamped up our CFL coverage a little bit. Also, you can find us on the Twitter handle at lastwordonCFL, and you can find us on iTunes or wherever you find your favorite podcasts. Darian Durant bails on the Blue Bombers right before training camp.
Yikes.
And by the end of training camp, the Blue Bombers really, 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 really need Darian Durant. Although, he didn't give him back the signing bonus. There was a lot of hard feelings. Darian and the PR guy were going back and forth. Yep. So there's a great argument to be made, especially after Dave Naylor tweeted that he's hearing that Darian would be open to returning to the Blue Bombers.
Is that right? I didn't
He tweeted out that he's hearing that. People close to him told him that he would be open if the Bombers approached him, but to date the Bombers have not done that, and I don't expect the Bombers will entertain that idea for one nanosecond. And if I was the Blue Bombers, I wouldn't entertain it either. You know my thoughts on that situation. Yeah. I'm probably more pro-league than I was pro-player, more than most people. Most people thought that it was terrific that finally a player was able to screw the league over. What do you think? Do you think that the Blue Bombers owe it to their fans and themselves to leave no stone unturned and pick up the phone and make a call to Darian Durant's agent?
I don't think it's got to that point yet. I mean, they haven't played a game yet. Nichols, I hear, is only out 4 weeks, 4 to 6 weeks.
We'd love to say that'll kill the season, but in an 18-game in the CFL, 4 to 6 weeks will not kill your season.
I don't think it's going to kill the season.
No.
And, in fact, this will give them a real chance to see what they have in Alex Ross and the other young kids they have there. But remember, they do have one of the best OCs in the league.
Lapo. Yeah.
They have the best running back in the league.
Harris. You still think that way?
I love Andrew Harris. I mean, I'm not a Bomber fan, but I love Andrew Harris. He's phenomenal. And they have Bowman, Denmark, right? They have pretty solid receivers, pretty good offensive line. I think they're going to just tell this young guy, don't.
Keep it simple.
Keep it simple.
The KISS method. Keep it simple, stupid.
I mean, you remember back in November or early December when Carson Wentz got hurt for the Eagles?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I was there. That was a game that we the tickets were like the stock price, and we just said, screw it, and we went back to the pool and watched the game from there. But anyways.
And the Nick Foles came, took over and did okay. They told him just to fall, you know, don't. Even though he was veteran to a point, he hadn't played for a while.
I think he struggled for a couple weeks.
He did.
The team won that game, but then over time he came out of it.
He had a few bad games, but over time they let him settle in, and they did it okay.
But Winnipeg doesn't have a Nick Foles. That's the problem.
No, Nick Foles. However, I believe that if Lapolis will design a playbook that will suit the guy, they have a good defense, great running game, very good veteran offensive line and receivers, I think they'll be okay. I think they'll be okay. They have a tough test on Thursday because they host Edmonton, and they usually struggle against the Eskimos. We'll see. I don't think it's time to panic yet.
They just need to get out of the basement of the West. That's all they need to do to get in the playoffs.
True. Now, if Nichols
probably
was hurt and was going to miss the 2018 season,
yeah,
then you go to Darian and say, okay, let's work something.
You'd even do it then, hey? You would.
I would.
That would be so hard after everything that's gone on.
You owe the fans and the organization to make the call.
Yeah.
Because, I don't know, right?
But at the same time, you kind of undermine the credibility of your organization.
I was just thinking about this, too, in relation to the bombers. Who has a really strong backup?
Around the league?
Around the league. There's a couple teams.
Kevin Glenn. Do a deal with Kevin with Edmonton for Kevin Glenn. I hadn't even thought of that.
I don't think Edmonton wants to let go Kevin Glenn.
Especially not to an a divisional rival.
Right. Toronto has Franklin, but Franklin's the heir apparent.
Nobody's getting moved from Toronto of those two, Franklin or Ray.
Ottawa has Dominic Davis, who was with the Bombers last year, but Trevor Harris has had some issues.
Ottawa's not letting any of their quarterbacks go. Montreal doesn't have a quarterback.
Hamilton, we don't know, right? But they're not going to give.
I hadn't even thought of that. That would be
give a Manziel or Mazzoli. One of the, unless Mazzoli is terribly.
If Mazzoli really blows it the first couple weeks and Manziel shows flashes, I could see week 3, week 4, a deal being put together to send Jeremiah to Winnipeg.
Too early. It would be.
Well, but by then, Nichols is ready to go.
By then, Nichols is ready to go. So I don't think there's any time to panic. But it shows you, and to all credit, Winnipeg did their due diligence in the offseason. They went out and they made an offer to Darian Durant. They signed him in good faith, and they thought he was going to be there.
They just gave him the signing bonus way too early.
Well, fine, but would it change if he didn't get the signing bonus? Obviously, he just wasn't interested in football anymore. That happened.
I have my own suspicions of why he signed that contract and why he and his agent decided they would push for an early signing bonus. But that's just...
Okay. So it was designed, huh? Well, maybe not. Who knows, right? Only Darian knows.
Nobody knows.
Nobody knows. And I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt, saying maybe I'm in good faith. He decided that, you know what, this isn't for me anymore. I just don't have the heart, the energy anymore. And there's a lot taken out of him the last couple of years.
He's 35. He just didn't want to get off. Or 36 this year.
36 this summer. And ever since 13, you know, that glory, that pinnacle he hit, raising the cup in Regina at Taylor Field, Mosaic Stadium, he has not even come close.
Really, middle of 2014.
Right, that's right.
Yeah.
That's when he got injured.
But, no, I get your point, though. In Winnipeg.
Odell Willis, I think.
In Winnipeg.
Yeah. Or it wasn't Odell Willis.
No.
It was...
Willis was gone by then.
Right.
Yeah, doesn't matter. But that was the end of Darian.
Westerman, I think.
But that was the end of Darian.
That was the end of Darian, yes.
Darian produced really nothing for the last 3.5. Right. Well,
is he a Hall of Famer, do you think?
No. He's a Plaza of Honor guy.
Plaza of Honor, for sure.
I wouldn't even hang his jersey up for the Riders.
Come on.
I don't know. It's pretty hard to get your jersey hung up. Who's had their jersey hung up? The four guys who died in the plane crash.
Yeah.
And then there's Ronnie. There's George. Ridgeway got it.
Ken Austin. No.
They didn't put Kent's jersey isn't up there, is it?
Is Ken
I don't think they hung his jersey up. No, it's Aldag and Ridgeway.
Ridge and Pulley. No, not even
Pulley. Not even Pulley. No.
You're right. I think there'll be debate about it.
We can argue. We'll be arguing about that for years.
Yes.
Plaza for sure. That's not debatable.
Yeah.
Montreal Alouettes. I keep trying to come up with reasons for optimism, reasons to be optimistic about the Alouettes. I like Cavis Reed. I'm so happy that he got the chance to be a general manager.
Yeah.
I've always thought he had great character, the way he owned the 13th man thing, and wore it for someone else, Jason Armstead. And I just want to come up with a reason for this franchise to do well, and I just can't.
No.
And Mike Sherman is the head coach, so that gives some optimism. And Rich Stubler is one of the great, I don't care what anyone says, he is one of the great all-time defensive minds. Is there any possible way they can pull a rabbit out of their hats and make something out of this season for the Montreal Alouettes, who so far just look, all indications are, will be dreadful?
Chip Cox came back, that was nice.
Right. Which to me is even makes it even worse. That tells me that, oh my God, the coaches looked at it and said, we need help.
We need a 34, 35-year-old guy coming in. Look, they're going to be terrible. They're going to be awful this year.
They might not win a game.
They could be the Cleveland Browns. They could be. They're going
to
be awful.
But the Browns only lost 16 games. The Alouettes have to play 18.
So they'll probably win 2. They'll win 2-4. I will predict that the commissioner will come out next May and say, now picking with their first pick overall in the 2019 CFL entry draft, the Montreal Alouettes select so-and-so.
So, yeah, if they don't screw it up by trading it before
right,
that.
They'll be picking first next year is what I'm trying to say. They're not even going to be close. They're not even in a conversation. And I think Mike Sherman is going to say at the end of the year, you know what, it was nice, but not quite for me. Thanks very much. And Cavis Reed might get the boot as well. It might be a complete house cleaning.
Yeah, if this year's a disaster, like a lot of people think it's going to be.
A massive disaster.
He won't get another shot
no,
at it.
I think it's... I hate to be this cynical, but I don't have any hope.
In this working.
That is going to work.
We're going to bring Marcus on in a little bit. Before we do that, I wanted to get to your division rankings.
Yes. Well,
last episode before the season starts.
Right. Well, I'll start with the West. I can't pick anybody but Calgary to be number one.
That's who I have.
They're just too consistent. And Bolivar Mitchell... I know they lost Messam. I know they lost
Hughes.
Marque McDaniels, Charleston Hughes. But I always said this. John Hofnagel finds, and his son, they find guys nobody knows about, nobody has any inclination about, and they become stars. And I don't know, I know it's preseason, but Friday night, boy, they sure look good. Some of those guys look very athletic. Even their backup quarterback, Arbuckle. Look pretty darn good.
Yeah.
You look very, like, poised for a young guy. So, Calgary number one.
They will never win a cup, though. Never trust a quarterback with three first names. Anyways. That's who I have at one, too.
Yeah.
How can you not?
A bit of a homer here. I'm going to put the Riders second. My expectations for the Riders that Chris Jones is going to provide a home playoff game for the fans. I'm going to put Winnipeg third because they may... lose a few games early due to the Nichols thing. Edmonton fourth and BC fifth. In the East, I'm going to pick the Argos.
Hold on. We'll do the West first. I was just going to say, I think you're right with number one.
Yeah.
Then I think you go a little off the rails. I think Saskatchewan and Winnipeg have way too many questions at quarterback. I think Edmonton has to be number two. That's just my view. I think Edmonton, yeah. I think that Chris Jones and the Riders will be fighting for third place with the BC Lions because Jennings has now come out and said, Jonathan Jennings, the Lions quarterback, that he wasn't 100% last year. Yeah. That could just be cover, it could be real, but regardless, we know that he's got it in him after what we saw in 2016.
You don't think Edmonton has a lot of questions? You know, they last year, remember, they won 7 in a row. They were 7-0.
I think they got to 8, no. Maybe it was 7.
And then they fell apart.
Well, they had a lot of injuries.
It's ridiculous. Yeah, well, but injuries are commonplace.
Well, did you hear my visit last week with Jed Roberts?
Yes, I did. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's what you get with Jason Moss.
Yeah.
And.
But has he changed? I doubt it.
Well, no, but I'm saying he never gets you to where you want to go.
Right.
But he never falls too far down either.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? He's always kind of somewhere in the middle.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how Danny Barrett was as a quarterback and as a head coach.
Yeah.
You know, 9-9, 9-9, 9-9. You might get an 11-7 in there or maybe one bad year. But really, you're always kind of just, you know, in the middle. And I feel like that's what Edmonton is.
I don't want to simplify it too much, but they did lose Darius Bowman. They did lose Brandon Zylstra to the Vikings. They Odell Willis, who I'm a fan of, left, right? He's in BC, I believe.
That's right. So they don't have the firepower that they had.
Not, or the panache, if you will.
Yeah.
That they had before. Now, I mean, Mike Riley is one of the best quarterbacks or players in the CFL.
He's okay.
But, I just think the others are too strong. Now, Edmonton, I think, will finish fourth, but at 10-8.
Okay, so you think it'll be kind of a repeat of last year? The order might not be quite
Calgary
the same,
14-4, Saskatchewan 11-7, Winnipeg 11-7, but Saskatchewan will have the tiebreaker. Edmonton 10-8, BC 8-10.
Wow.
Yeah. Now probably haven't done my math correctly, but you could probably tell the East is going to lose a lot of games.
I think that Edmonton will get second, and then I think it goes Saskatchewan third. Mm-hmm. Winnipeg fourth, BC fifth, but BC is such a wild card.
Oh, yeah.
Because we just, they are the box of chocolates in all of this. Because you just don't know what you're going to get. You could get the team that stormed out of the gate. I think they were 5-1 last year, 4-2, and beat some good teams. They went on the road. Remember they played all those games down east. Yeah. They went into Toronto. They beat the Argos at home.
Yeah, so did we. So did I. Nobody won any games in the east last year.
The East didn't win any games against the West, or very few.
Right. They beat each other.
But early on, the Lions, I thought, looked like the team to beat in the West. I thought they would go, maybe not the team to beat, but I thought they would trade punches with the Stampeders. And it was a game at home they lost to Edmonton that they blew. They shouldn't have blown. And then the real turning point was when they went into Saskatchewan and just got the crap kicked out of them.
Ed Gainey got 4 interceptions that game. That was the that was when Jonathan Jennings was pulled, and there was questions about him.
And he got 5 turnovers, did he not?
Well, yeah, like I said, Ed Gainey got 4 interceptions.
And then one turnover. Yeah, because I remember I was at the Folk Festival after, and people were asking me if that was a record. And I said, no. I remember Rod Hill with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers had five interceptions, five picks in one game. Before we go, or before I let you go out of here, the East.
East. Gotta love the Argos. I think the Argos are going to do very well. I think they're going to run away with the East. I'm going to have Hamilton, Mr. Manziel, the Manziel factor. We'll get him in a home playoff game. Ottawa, I'm not sure about Ottawa anymore. And
just because of the quarterback thing?
Yeah, and just simply because you saw some decline last year in every part of their game.
You think about it, they've declined 2 years in a row now. Even though they won the Grey Cup the next year.
Yeah. So, and of course, this is all post-Henry.
Yeah.
So Ottawa and then Montreal, of course, will, as we talked about, will be god-awful. So that's my predictions.
I agree with your 1-4, and I think there will probably be a crossover. Yes. I think Ottawa will find more wins than Hamilton.
Yes. And I'm going to boldly say that the Edmonton Eskimos and the Saskatchewan Roughriders will be in this year's Grey Cup in Edmonton.
You think through the crossover? The West is that much stronger that we're going to...
Or Calgary. So it's either Calgary versus Edmonton or Saskatchewan versus Edmonton in the Grey Cup here. Part of me hopes I'm wrong, but part of me hopes I'm right too. Because now, can you imagine Calgary and Edmonton in the Grey Cup? In Edmonton? Or Saskatchewan in Edmonton in the Grey Cup?
I think people out west would love it. I think the TV ratings would be
crazy.
Would be okay.
It'd be fine.
It would hurt the league from the standpoint that the East would just completely tune it out.
Yeah, to a point, right? But I think
they kind of do that anyways, though.
They do. I think the matchup would be intriguing, though. It would be just for 1 year, right? We did see Saskatchewan Winnipeg in 07 play out in Toronto. But just the prospects of having a prairie rivalry, you know, or provincial rivalry playing each other in the Grey Cup in one of the host cities would be phenomenal.
It would be like 07 Winnipeg, Saskatchewan, in Toronto, except not in Toronto, actually in the West.
Or in Edmonton. Or in Regina. So,
but it would be in Edmonton, an all West in the West, is what you're saying. Right. Yeah, we've never seen that before.
No, never seen it before. And I think that would be phenomenal. For some of the people, mediocre for others. But anyways, that's my long shot prediction for the Grey Cup here. It's probably be something like Toronto and Calgary, like last year.
You'll just completely screw it up.
Yeah.
Well, I think the Stampeders need to learn to have a little more fun if they're going to have a shot at it, because I think that whole scene is going to get stale if it's just, you know, going through the motions. Like Michael Ball said it best. He said, when he worked their sideline last year, he said, they don't seem to me like a team that gets too excited about much.
Right. Hey, but did you not see them on the sidelines on Friday night? They were pretty jubilant when that interception, couple interceptions. They were quite vocal and quite celebratory. So maybe the attitude's changing.
They need to bring some of that fun back.
Maybe.
And now that Huff is up in the booth, they can have more fun.
Maybe. But here's the question. I have one little gripe about preseason football. Why are you throwing the challenge flag for pass interference? Who cares?
Oh, for, yeah.
Move on. Don't delay the game, okay? Just move on. Was it Chris Jones threw one in the late third quarter? Come on.
They just need to outlaw that altogether.
Just enough already. I did say to somebody I was watching the game with, at least it gives the booth some practice. Maybe it's their preseason.
Yeah.
Maybe
no, I think so. It's the refs.
Like, enough. Who cares about the yellow flag?
Yeah.
Move on. Save it for the season.
And it's the refs preseason, too.
True.
I know you got to run. Thanks for coming in.
Well, thank you for having me again. It was a real pleasure.
Marshall Lerner on Chunky and the Man podcast episode number 27. Do we have Marcus? We got Marcus? Marcus!
What's up, buddy?
Can you hear me?
Yep, can you hear me?
I can hear you. You sound fantastic.
All right.
You're home.
I'm in my car outside the gym.
Oh, my goodness. Well, I don't want to interfere with that. How was the drive? Did you drive overnight again?
I was in Indianapolis. That's straight shot.
Wow. I've never done that before. I couldn't do it.
It was tough.
All right. All right. We'll keep this short and sweet. Chris Jones has been playing with everybody, he's being coy about who his starting quarterback is going to be in the game Friday night. Does anybody on earth honestly believe that it's going to be anyone but Zach Collaros?
If anybody on earth thinks it's anybody else but Zach, it's retarded or dumb, because no way in the world you don't pay somebody $400,000 and let them sit on the bench. So people know, but they just don't want to be the first to say it, I think. But I think Chris Jones knows. He knows. Everybody else knows about it. So, I mean, the type of guy he is, it's all about the money, right? Being a GM, it's about how old you are and about the money you get paid. So that's what it comes down to.
Well, why would he even bother doing this? Like, why wouldn't he just come out and say that Zach's going to start? I mean, I've heard so many coaches over the years say that they're not going to announce their starting quarterback till the first drive or game day. And it, like, Doug Barry used to do this with Winnipeg. It never did him a lick of good. I mean, why do coaches do this?
I mean, it's all about the – to me, it's all about the edge up on the other team. They're trying to make the other team waste more time on looking at both quarterbacks instead of looking at just one quarterback. So they trying to, I think he's trying to make the other team work harder to prepare for both quarterbacks instead of just one, which I don't understand, because they know who Brandon Bridge is already and they know who Zach Collaros is already. So all you have to do is go back and watch film a little bit on both guys, and it's simple as 1, 2, 3.
Do you ever remember an opposing offense ever doing that to you when you were a player, like playing at coy all week and then coming out on the field and during the week you thinking, oh, gee, who's it going to be? Could it be him? Could it be him? Like, does it even have an effect on the defense of the other team in terms of game plan preparation?
Well, with BC Lions, when they had Dave Dickerson and Jarius Jackson and Buck Pierce, they tried that with us, but we knew with Dave Dickerson, Dave liked to hold the ball more and look for that big play. Jerry's was more of a drop back and try to throw the ball quick, and Buck was drop back and Buck would run around a little bit too. So they tried it with us, but it never really helped us out. We just made sure we stay in our pass rush lanes, and pretty much it just never really affected us too much, which I don't think it affects other teams that much anyway, because football is football. Whether the guy can run or not, you still have to pass rush and stay in your pass rush lane.
Another thing I want to bring up, Saskatchewan's going to go into the season maybe with 3 starting import offensive linemen. I know other teams have done it over the years, but it's still pretty rare. And, whether you like them or hate them, I think you have to respect the fact that Chris Jones does things his way. Maybe not respect it, but acknowledge it. He does things his way, and he really doesn't think conventionally, does he?
No, I mean, I like how Chris Jones thinks about that, doing things his way. I think every coach should do things his way. I think when coaches start looking at other coaches trying to get ideas, I think that's when they get, they be unsuccessful, because they're not being themselves. that's why I like Coach Etcheverry so much, because Etcheverry is who he is every day, all day. Same way with Roy Shivers. He is who he is every day, all day. So I love guys like that.
I see that Three Down Nation had a story in the last week that you can actually get TSN without hooking up to a cable subscription. You knew that was eventually going to happen. It's kind of a sport for me where I try to see every game every week. Do you just watch like the Alouettes, the Alouettes and Riders, or do you watch every game like I do? I mean, you're a little busier than I am, but do you try to catch every game?
I try to watch every game because it's football. I just love football. I love to, you know, watch a good football. I mean, if the game is boring, I won't watch it. But you know, if it's a blowout, I won't watch it because it's. But I mean, I try to watch every game that comes on TV because I just love watching football. But I don't. You know me. I don't cheer for a team. I just love to watch football and love to watch certain players play.
Yeah, thank God it's finally June and it's finally the regular season. And that's a great thing about football, right? It's different, I think, from all the other sports, particularly hockey, where if it's a low-scoring game, it's really, really boring to watch. Whereas football, if it's a low-scoring game, it's fascinating to watch still because you're thinking about the defensive matchups, the strategy, field position, all the rest of it. Hey, listen, we got to go. Thanks for coming on, pal. So great to have you back in the country, and we'll have you in studio next week, okay?
All right, for sure, buddy. Take care of yourself, man.
Okay, thanks, buddy.
All right, bud.
Thanks, pal. Bye. I'll let you go get your workout. Okay.
All right. Okay.
Take care. See you, buddy. Bye.
You too, bye.
Just wanted to get Marcus on. I know he just returned home from his long trip to Indianapolis. That guy puts on more miles than just about anybody I know. I'll have to talk to my truck driver friends. I don't think any of them put on more mileage than Marcus Chunky Adams. Special thanks to Marcus. Special thanks to Marshall Lerner, who co-hosted this week's episode. Marcus Adams coming on the program. This has been episode number 27 of Chunky and the Man CFL podcast, brought to you by LastWordOnSports.com.